Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mike's on. He's ready to go.
On the Fan.
New York Sports Radio.
Mike's on. Mike's on.
All right, hour number two on this Sunday morning. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times, to say the least, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. And if you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Scott Pioli joins us now, NFL executive. Scott, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks. How are you today?
All right. Crazy week in the NFL as they try to reopen and everything. But first, let's get to some of this off-the-field stuff. You know, first, when a team hears or has an incident where all of a sudden the authorities are involved and there's an allegation of a serious crime, what is the first thing you guys do?
Well, it's unfortunately, I've been involved with smaller incidents and then the worst of the worst possible incidents.
Right.
Right. And, you know, so it's usually when you get the call, the first thing that you do is you get a hold of the player, or if it's not the player that reaches you, you get them in contact with, you get in contact with the authorities, you get in touch with your player engagement director, because usually that's the first call that the player makes. Before they call the coach, they call the player, you know, the player programs person. And then you have to start the gathering of the information while also coming up with some sort of statement to get out to the public. And the fact is everyone says, oh, that's just the typical statement that they're gathering information. But that's what you have to do, because a lot of times there's allegations and you don't know what the truth is and what the truth isn't. Sometimes the players are being honest. Sometimes they're not being honest. You just don't know what you're getting. So you go into this information gathering mode immediately with as many reliable people as possible, and you always have to be working hand-in-hand with the authorities to find out what they're saying.
When you have a kid like Baker, who was a first-round pick just 2 years ago, are you going to run back, if you're the Giants, and say, what did we miss? Or are you going to say, it's just luck of the draw?
I think it's human nature that you always go back and say, okay, what did we miss? Did we miss anything? And in the case of DeAndre Baker, I don't think the Giants missed anything on this. And there's going to be people that are going to be critical of the New York Giants, because I was involved in that draft at the time. I was living in Atlanta. 40 miles up the road is Athens, Georgia. This was a kid who did not have any criminal issues. He did not have criminal background. There were no legal issues in his background. I mean, there was some talk that came out that there were some minor accountability issues. And when I say accountability issues, everything that we have in our notes, or that I have in the notes that I still have, are, he was late for meetings every once in a while. He was late to be in the weight room. He didn't always give 100% in practice. But those things are complete,
Yeah.
Mike, if I had a nickel for every player
nothing to do with this, obviously.
Exactly,
you know?
Right. This is an alleged criminal situation. There's nothing in this player's background. And I know Kirby well, and I know that staff well. If there was something that was underlying, this is one of the most important parts of scouting, too, is when you're doing research, having good relationships with college coaches and people within programs is really important, because they may not give a blanket statement to all 32 teams, but if you have a good relationship, they may say, hey, listen, the kid, we found him you know, he tested positive three times, even though none of that was public. And this was not the case with DeAndre Baker. He didn't have any of those issues. He didn't have a party issue. He didn't have, you know, criminal issues. So this one is a little bit surprising to me, if it's true. And again, because right now we've only got allegations and one side of the story. And that's why I think the public needs to tap the brakes just a little bit. What we've got is one side of this situation, right? A police report is a police report.
Right. You don't know. You got to always say, listen, when you're in my end of the business, you always have to remind yourself to say alleged because you just don't know. You don't know.
Exactly.
We've known that stories have blown up. Right. We know that sometimes you wind up the story isn't true. So we've all had it happen. So you remind yourself to say alleged because you have to.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've been in these situations, Mike, again, unfortunately, where there's been players that you don't think, there's nothing to lead you to believe that there would be a situation or an incident, but that's, you know, I think that happens. We all have friends in life, people in our lives, family and friends, you know, at different times where we turn around and say, wow, I never thought that person would have been capable of that.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's what human beings do, you know, is unfortunately they surprise us in good ways and bad ways sometimes.
Well, listen, you were there when they drafted Aaron Hernandez, and there was a guy that people said, oh, they should have known this, they should have known that. I'm sure a lot of the things that came out of Florida years later, you guys know nothing about. I mean, how would you know about it?
Well, actually, I wasn't there when Hernandez was drafted.
Okay.
I was down to Kansas City at that point in time. And again, but Hernandez didn't have things in his background that people knew. Again, I wasn't there when the Patriots drafted him, but there were some things, but nothing that would have led you to believe that it could have become the monster that it became.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to – I mean, how is somebody supposed to know that someone's going to – like, with this Baker thing, there's been reports – that he may have lost a lot of money to these people over the last couple of weeks, and maybe he thought he was taken or something like that. He shouldn't have, listen, he should have never, if he did this, it's the worst mistake he could ever make, but sounds like maybe he went down the wrong road with gambling and stuff and got himself in trouble. I mean, that's what's been, I don't know that that's a fact yet, but there's been a lot of reports about that he had lost a lot of money gambling in recent weeks.
And if that is the case, you know, we've seen that happen a lot of times where good people end up in bad situations, or even if they're not good, regular people end up in bad situations, and they do things you don't expect. You know, Mike, you know, and I don't want to avoid this, you know, is the fact is I may not have been there for the Aaron Hernandez thing, but I was in Kansas City.
And you were in the worst situation. I mean, you were in that horrendous situation with Romeo, right?
And it's not about me. The reality is that was a player that I signed as a rookie free agent, brought in. He was with the program for 4 years, and there was never any indication. I mean, even when he came out of the University of Maine, he was part of the domestic abuse council on campus, looking out for you know, people that were victims of domestic abuse. And then 4 years later, you know, again, before he took his own life, what people forget was he was a murderer. And so people will do things that you don't, and sometimes when you think you know people and what they're capable of, we don't always know the truth, and we don't always know people's darkest places.
Scott, why does it seem, and again, I haven't done the math on it, but it just seems to me, always being here talking about these stories, that in the NFL, there are so many more stories with guns than there are with any other sport for some reason. Is there a fascination? Have you found that there's a thread where there's a fascination now with young players and guns? I mean, why is there always guns involved?
Mike, yeah, right, because of what we've seen happen this weekend. Mike, I think one of the weird realities that's come to me is, you know, in working in these years, over time, over the last 27, I'll call it 30 years, there has been an increase in the number of people that own firearms. I think part of what happens is, you know, I think a couple things happen with the NFL. Is they have far more players on the roster than any other team sport. You look at basketball players and the numbers of their the number on their rosters. Major League Baseball players,
absolutely true.
So I think you have a wider or a larger sampling of people
without question
are probable of getting caught with these guns. I just think, And people will say, oh, well, look at this guy, and they'll want to, unfortunately, make this a race issue or make it a background issue. But here's what I've learned in my 30 years in the NFL. It doesn't matter whether you are from a city or an urban environment or a rural environment, because I'll tell you what, I think I know more players with more guns that are from much more rural areas than there are. And you know, they talked about being hunters and
right.
And so it's there's this again, Mike, I don't understand it. However, my father and brother are both hunters. They own multiple guns. I've never owned a gun in my life. I don't hunt. So I think it's part of, you know, we have this right to bear arms and people will have it. But I think in the NFL it becomes more prevalent because there's just more players on the roster. There's more, and then the more players you have, the more opportunities. And you look at, you know, hockey players, their rosters aren't as big. So I just think there's a larger sampling, Mike.
All right, let's get to the other big issue this week was the NFL and this whole minority proposal, okay, that's mm-hmm. going to go to the owners, which I think is ridiculous, okay? I think, first of all, I think anytime you make anything, I think there's the competitive side of football that should remain competitive, that should deal only with competitive, which should be linked to play on the field. I think the draft status should be linked to play on the field. That's the way it should be done. The idea, folks, if you're not paid attention to it, is they feel there is a slowdown of minority hirings, so they are going to elevate teams' draft status and give them better picks if they either hire or retain or have players taken from their team who are already established minority candidates as coaches. Now, here's what I think. You've lived in this, and we're talking with Scott Pioli, who's been the NFL Executive of the Year on multiple occasions, is a top executive in the league. I think the league, I've been around the league 40 years. There was a huge issue with race in this league. Enormous. I think it's 1,000% better. I don't know when I ever say anything's perfect. But I remember when you couldn't play safety and be black. You couldn't be a center and play and be black. You couldn't be, forget being a quarterback and be black. Now it doesn't matter what position a player is. I mean, that's completely gone. And I don't think there is that big an issue. I think the issue is this. This is just me talking. Now you tell me what you think. I think there's two problems with minority hiring in the NFL. I don't think it has anything to do with anybody being racist or biased, because I think owners, all they want to do is win. They're colorblind. They see the color green. That's all they see is money. They don't see anything else. And they see wins and losses. I think there's two problems. Number one, I think a lot of the candidates think the job is a thankless job when they're turning from a player into real life. They think it's a thankless job on the way up. Too many hours, not enough pay, blah, blah, blah. And then number two, I think there's a logjam where from certain positions, it's very hard to get elevated. Most of your elevated people come on the offensive side from the passing game. The passing game is, from a coaching standpoint, has a lot more white candidates or non-minority candidates than does the running backs or the wide receivers. And those guys, because they don't spend as much time around the passing game, don't get elevated as quickly as the guys do who are around the passing game. You see quarterback coaches get elevated very quickly. And I think the predominant side of them, most of them are white. So I think that's it. I think really, though, the biggest issue, Scott, is I think the really good candidates don't go coach because they think it's too much of a long line, or they have to put in too many years for not enough money at the beginning when they could easily get into the job if they wanted to. So tell me why you think, if you do think there's an issue, and what you think is the best way to fix it.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's an incredibly complicated issue, and where I think I would disagree with Mike is I there are biases in this league, and I think for us to say that there's
from the owners, you think, and, is that what you think?
I think there are with certain. I think here's part of where the problem comes in, Mike, is everyone talks about the head coaching, the lack of minority head coaches,
right.
True problem, the lack of coordinators that are minority candidates. Those things are all true. Part of that problem emanates from the fact that it's a proximity issue, right? Where, generally speaking, people hire people that they're more comfortable with, that they are in the same circles with, and the facts are the facts. And the people that are in the positions to hire, there's different, again, circles of people that hang out together and have comfort together. I think the other thing is this, Mike. One of the things, because I've been on the Bill Walsh Diversity Council with the league office since it started years ago, and so I'm a part of all these conversations and the things that are talked about and that go on. And I think one of the other issues here that we refuse to recognize and acknowledge is when there are coaching hires, when there are coaching changes, we talk about the head coaching position, right? Because that is the most it's the most obvious face of the franchise, so to speak. And what happens, though, is who does the hiring? It's not just the owners, but who is the person that's always in the ear of the owner? It's team presidents. And one of the biggest problems is when most people will hire people that are similar to them or look like them or are in the same social circles as them. And one of the biggest problems in the National Football League, to me, in terms of the hiring, is the fact that we don't have enough minority candidates, however you want to define that, whether it's race, whether it's gender. There was one high-ranking black official in the National Football League, Kevin Warren, who's now, you know, he left the Minnesota Vikings. So the people that are sitting in the room that are making the decisions on hiring coaches, there's a problem there as well. There's not one black owner in the National Football League.
Well, that's going to take time. That takes time. I mean, because here's why. NFL franchises don't turn over. And listen, are you trying to tell me that if someone who was a black individual who had billions of dollars wanted to buy a franchise, they wouldn't let them? They would let them in a second. You know they would. It's just that you don't have that many people who could afford. Well, because there aren't that many black men yet who can afford billions of dollars. NFL franchises now cost billions of dollars. That will come in time, just like there was never any owners in any sport, and now you do have black owners, and you'll have more. Here's what I think the problem is. You're not getting the people in the pool to get the number up. I think that's the issue, and the question is why. I don't think it's that the owners, and I think owners pick coaches probably more, or at least put the stamp on coaches more than anybody else. And what I would do first is I would expose them. I would do this, and I don't know if this has ever been done. Tell me if it's ever been done. I never thought about this till just now. I would look at a history of every franchise and say, has this franchise ever had a black head coach, a black offensive or defensive coordinator, or a black general manager? And let's see the ones that haven't, okay? And I would bet you most of them at one time or another have. Wouldn't you agree?
I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. I would say that the majority have, because ownerships have changed hands as well. Right.
Like I'm looking at the Giants. The Giants have had a black general manager. The Jets have had a black head coach. The Pats have had a black general manager. I'm trying to go through every team.
Right.
But my point is, I think it's about candidates. And if you get a guy like Mike Tomlin, you're not going to get him back on the market. He's going to stay there forever. I mean, that's just the way it is. You need more good candidates. And I think the thing is, when you get guys who were, if you get the Tom Landrys or the Dan Reeves or the Mike Ditkas who want to go into coaching, I don't think the black player who is a top black player, a lot of them, they don't want to go into coaching. They could easily go into coaching. I don't think they want to go into coaching.
But there's plenty of people that are coaching and head coaches that didn't play. And so we're specifying here a small segment of the population where – and here's the thing, Mike. I've been in this and I've watched how this process goes. And part of the problem, again, or another part of the problem is – in terms of having candidates, quote-unquote, is there's not enough people ascending within the league into coordinator roles, into a lot of the roles that become the stepping stones to getting to the head coach position. And again, just the fact that we're sitting here having to think back, okay, this team you know, this team had one head coach or had one black general manager, or the Giants had one black general manager. That's part of the problem, is we're sitting here having to think that hard to say, okay, they've had one person.
Well, remember, we were starting with zero. We were starting.
It kind of reminds me of some of the people I grew up in my neighborhood that say, oh, I've got a black friend.
No, but you see, but you're starting, Scott, but you're starting from zero. You're starting from 30 years ago where it was unheard of. So you're not going to have it all at once. It's not going to happen overnight. But remember, we were in a league where it was a big deal to have a black quarterback. Now it's not even a thought anymore. It's not even a thought, okay? A position on the field is not even a thought anymore. You know this. You know when you wouldn't have a black center or a black safety in the league. Those aren't even a thought anymore. I mean, that doesn't even come into consideration anymore. So those days are gone. And I think most teams could care less what color a coach is. Now, you might tell me there's a guy in the league who's a bigot. I'm sure there is a bigot in the league or two. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is why aren't there more black players or black people entering or getting opportunities to get into coaching at the lower levels? Because if you get in at the lower levels, you're going to increase the numbers. That's where it has to happen. And then I would look at how coordinators. Now, I think what happens with coordinators is you have a lot of position coaches. If you go and mark them down, I would say in the league, a lot more of the position coaches are wide receiver coaches or are running back coaches than they are quarterback coaches, probably. I bet you that's probably true.
And that's part of the historical problem. And Mike, you're saying, right, 30 years ago, one of the problems is when you start from below ground zero and you say, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, for instance, or that is it. Is it exponentially better now than it was 30 years ago? The problem is the 70 previous years of the league and the country and the culture that we have. So it's just because it's better doesn't mean that it's good enough, right? It's like
here's the thing:
9-7 season as a coach. I'm just talking philosophically here. Well, look at how much better 9-7 is when you took over a team that was 6-10. But the problem is 9-7 still isn't good enough either. So again, I think now.
But here's how I would look at it, Scott: is if you were looking at a situation, and I understand this is a very, very long and very technical and very involved conversation. But my point is this: I don't believe that there's a guy who is screaming to be a head coach who isn't a head coach because he's black. And he has interviewed great, and people are saying, I'm not hiring him because he's black. I don't believe that's true. I think you got to make sure we're delivering enough candidates. How do we deliver the candidates? I don't think the people, owners, care anymore if they hire a black coach. I think they did. I don't think they care anymore. Now, you want to tell me there's a guy who's a bigot? I'm sure there is. But my point is, I don't think there's a guy in the league, like people are saying now, oh, Eric Bieniemy hasn't been hired the last 2 years. Everyone's bringing him up. One of the problems why Eric Bieniemy's, one is his base is in the running game. Number one, that hurts. Number two, he is behind an offensive guru. Everybody thinks it's Andy Reid who's the offensive genius. That hurts him. There's no question. Eventually, he'll probably get a job. But
the flip side of that argument is, Mike, that, okay, what about all the coaches that are coming out of the Belichick tree, right, that are being considered defensive geniuses when people know that Bill, or the assumption is that Bill was the person calling all the plays and calling all the defenses, but yet, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate.
I understand. Now, listen,
Eric Mangini got an opportunity. Matt Patricia got an opportunity. All
no question.
Other coaches,
and I think they've hired too many. I think you've hired too many Pats.
I'm sorry.
I think they've hired too many Patriot coaches. I think it's been proven they've hired
up
too
that
many.
Point. Yeah. I mean, you bring up the Eric Bieniemy point. Is, you know, and but you talk to Andy Reid. Andy Reid is you know, all for Eric Bieniemy and believes Eric Bieniemy. And again, what happens? And I want to go back to this. I did not say, and I'm not saying that there are owners that are bigots. What I'm saying is, or what I did say, is that there are biases in this league. For whatever reason, there are biases. People want to hire people that they're most comfortable with. People that they, and again, social settings and the way people are, that feeling of comfort is because there is this innate discomfort between the races at certain points of time. and people not understanding one another's culture. Again, this is much more complicated than this half-hour show can take up. But going back to this rule that's proposed, that they're going to vote on.
You like it?
No, but Anthony Lynn, I think, said it best the other day. You know, who is one of the, the black coaches in the National Football League. You know, he said sometimes,
and a good coach.
Sometimes you can do the wrong thing while trying to do the right thing.
Right.
I think what's happened here is the Rooney Rule had great intention. It had a great, the concept was great. It had good intentions. What happened though is people who didn't want to pay attention to the rule, just like every rule that's made in this country, regardless of the business and the industry, people are looking for ways to fast track what they want, their ideas, their agenda, and they skirt the rules. And that's what started happening to the Rooney Rule. And the league, rather than punishing people who were clearly circumventing the Rooney Rule, they didn't punish those people. Now we're flipping to the other side, which is to incentivize, which I don't agree with the incentivizing something like this either, because in certain ways, I think, will it maybe help the problem that we have here? I think maybe a little tiny bit in some places, but then what it's also doing is it's punishing the stable franchises. A team, again, we go back to the Patriots, who have been stable for 20 years, they're going to get leapfrogged because they have a good system, because they have a good program.
Yeah, it's not fair. No, it's completely unfair. It's a wrong idea. It's a completely wrong idea.
So, and again, whereas the league in the past, when they have found these clear violations, what they haven't done is gone out and punished people, because, you know, it goes back to this whole idea of, do we really want to punish someone? You know, do we want to? There's this new way, and I don't mean to sound like the get off my lawn old man here, but
Right. We've
gotten away from, when people do something wrong, we don't point it out as much. We don't want to embarrass people. And I'm not sure that that's the best, you know, that was the best way to do it either. There's a better idea. I just at least like the fact, I've sat in these meetings, that ideas are coming up. We've got to find a better idea. Do I think this is the solution? Personally, I don't. But there are other things that we have to do to incentivize, and it doesn't have to be moving up in the draft or something like that.
All right, we're finishing up with Scott Bielan. Scott, the other thing this week was in Green Bay, you have Aaron Rodgers talking about how unhappy he was, understands it, but unhappy, and that maybe he won't be able to finish his career as he planned. The question is, from the other side, you have a very young regime there. You have a head coach who's just turned 40 who has a big first year. You think he's looking to move on and move to the future, or would he rather finish his would he like to squeeze every ounce out of this quarterback, or would he rather move on to his new young quarterback?
I think what he wants to do is make sure that he can win while he's transitioning to that new quarterback that he believes he likes in Jordan Love. These are always complicated situations, right? And what I don't think he wants to do is take a step backwards. I think he would love to see Aaron Rodgers and he coexist as they move towards the future, have the young player Jordan Love not be forced into play too soon before it's time. But I think what he's done here is the head coach realizes more than likely his career is going to last longer than Aaron Rodgers is at the peak. And that's where he needs to be smart. And whether Jordan Love is the answer or not, I think he did the right thing conceptually, because, you know, even though quarterbacks are playing longer now because of the rule changes that we've put in where they get hit less and they take less of a beating, their careers can last longer. But I really think he did the right thing here in transition. It's ironic, you know, Mike, that the whole situation where he came in, meaning Aaron Rodgers, and it was the end of Brett Favre's career, and just how much, I don't know if it was overt animosity, but there was a weirdness about the relationship, and some of the thoughts that maybe Aaron Rodgers was having as a young player, he's now having to live the life of the prior Hall of Famer. And
absolutely. I don't know if he does it differently, but the other thing is, does he treat them like Favre wouldn't tutor Rodgers? Will Rodgers tutor the next quarterback?
Well, and this is the funny thing, because, you know, that's part of what Rodgers was upset about and took offense to and didn't appreciate him.
Right, and now, so maybe he'll do it.
With the same situation.
You know, maybe he'll do it.
Right, and this is a chance for Aaron Rodgers to step up and live what he should, that he, you know, he was, I don't know if he openly criticized Brett, but he made it clear that Brett didn't do him any favors. Now, this is his opportunity to help that player grow, you know, and it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if he does it and to see if he becomes more selfless than what Brett Favre was. You know, it was interesting because, again, at the Patriots, watching that transition, even though Drew Bledsoe was very upset and very bothered by the changing of the guard that was happening after he came back from his injury, he actually did the right thing as a human being. And that's a very difficult balance to be human and be a competitor.
He turned out to be a very good guy, Drew Bledsoe, didn't he? He turned out to be a very good guy.
He did, and I think, you know, sometimes those crises, you know, show sometimes the worst in a person and then sometimes the best in a person. But Drew eventually, you know, he ended up transitioning and he and Tom became friends and they worked through it, and that didn't, you know, mean that Drew wasn't disappointed and at times pissed off, but any good competitor would have been and should have been.
All right. Listen, thanks very much. We'll talk next week. Appreciate it very much, Scott. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Look forward
to it. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.